This is a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Inside Story on BFM 89.9.
Good evening. You're listening to Inside Story with Sharmila Ganesan and Lee Chui Lin. Tonight, what else? We're talking about Parliament being dissolved yesterday and looking ahead to GE15.
So first, we're going to look at how the major players are doing and what to anticipate moving forward. And then we discuss what it means for federal and state elections to be out of sync and how the floods factor in.
Tell us, how are you feeling about GE15 coming up soon? What do you make of the timing? You can call 7733 2900, send us a WhatsApp or voice note at 018-789-8899, tweet at BFM Radio. This is Inside Story. It is 6:08, and just in case you missed it, yesterday PM Dato' Sri Ismail Sabri Yaakob announced the dissolution of the parliament, putting to end weeks, can I even say months, of speculation as to whether the GE15 will be held this year or not, and whether it'll be held during flood season.
Remains to be seen, the flooding.
That is true.
Because many commentators have pointed out that the floods may themselves be postponed to make way for GE15. I had to make that joke. It was there. It has been widely said. So it is done now. Anyway, this announcement comes after really ages of growing pressure from UMNO President Datuk Sri Dr. Ahmad Zahid Hamidi for a vote to be held as soon as possible. In the PM's announcement, he basically ran through the process, saying that he had an audience with the King, who had consented to dissolve Parliament in accordance with the Federal Constitution. He said that this was done to put a stop to all the voices that questioned the legitimacy of the government. Following that announcement, the Palace had issued a statement expressing the King's disappointment at current political developments, saying that that had left them with no choice but to assent to a dissolution that would return the mandate to the people.
So what comes next is essentially that GE must be held within 60 days of Parliament being dissolved. So the Election Commission is now expected to meet within the week, and they will be announcing both nomination day as well as polling day. And once polling day is finalized, once polling day is finalized, we'll know nomination and early polling day. But some of the more interesting developments that have surfaced is the PM advised the state governments to seek the consent of rulers and governors and dissolve their respective state assemblies so that state assemblies can be held at the same time as GE15. And he mentioned that this is with the exception of Sabah, Sarawak, Melaka and Johor. But states led by Pakatan Harapan and PAS have so far said that they won't be holding state elections during monsoon season. This includes Penang, Selangor, Negeri Sembilan, Kelantan, Kedah and Terengganu, which means that it's Pahang, Perak and Perlis that will be open to state elections.
So there are a few things factoring in here, right? There is, of course, the monsoon season being key to all of it. But there is also the question of cost, which is something that has come up a number of times. The costs potentially of holding state elections separate to the federal elections, of having it at a later date. So there is that, and that's something that we're going to work through later. But all of which to say, while the speculation about whether or not Parliament will be dissolved has ended, the next wave has arrived at our doorstep, and that is the question of, okay, so when then? When exactly is GE15 going to be held? And if we look at past precedent, the EC announced those dates about 3 days previously after the dissolution of Parliament. So I suppose we can expect to find out this week.
Yes, so lots to talk about. We're going to be looking at where the various players are currently, what we can expect as we move towards the elections. We'd like to hear from you. How are you feeling about GE15 coming up soon? What do you make of the timing? You can call 7733 2900, WhatsApp or voice note 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. Very shortly, we'll be speaking with Dr. Bridget Welsh, Honorary Research Associate at the University of Nottingham, Malaysia.
And just briefly, we are also, of course, in the thick of preparing our election programming, focusing on Battle for Malaysia. So if you want to be a part of that, send us a voice note answering a separate question. What do you want from the government? Again, it is going to be running across the station, part of our election shows. So we want to hear from you. What do you want from the government? Send us a 20-second or so voice note, 018-789-8899.
Become fabulous millionaires. BFM 89.9.
It's 6:14. You're listening to Inside Story with Sharmila and Lynn, and we're talking about GE15, specifically where all the different players are, what we can look forward to. Send your thoughts our way. How are you feeling about GE15 coming up soon? What do you make of the timing? You can call us 7733 2900, WhatsApp, or send us a voice note 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. Joining us now is Dr. Bridget Welsh, Honorary Research Associate at the University of Nottingham, Malaysia. Bridget, always good to have you with us.
Great to be here.
So let's start with your takeaways. It's all everyone was predicting, really, but what did you make of the timing of the dissolving of Parliament right after the budget?
I felt it was irresponsible of an election gimmick. You know, little does very little to attract investment for the country, help to strengthen the economy, build international credibility for Malaysia. You know, I think, and more fundamentally, it doesn't, you know, put attention to the problems of governance that the country is facing. You know, one could even go as far in cynicism to say that this was about attracting political donations, strengthening the political fortunes of individuals, and, you know, in fact, creates more problems down the line, because like in 1999, which was another very tumultuous political year, you had to have a budget again. And, you know, this is a waste of government resources.
So the pressure for the dissolution of Parliament and the pushing for GE seemed to be coming mainly from UMNO President Datuk Seri Ahmad Zahid Hamidi. Is triggering elections this early and this close to the monsoon season really an advantage for the party?
I think there are two dimensions here, right? First of all, you know, let's recognize that this is very much about the interests of Zahid himself as the party president, right? He's wants another desperate get out of jail card. His other outstanding case is much more substantive, even more so than the previous one, which is currently being under appeal. So I think, you know, his interests and his desire to become prime minister is driving a lot of these things. But I do see that UMNO felt that their momentum was stronger earlier in the year. And the party as a whole leadership do see and saw an early elections in their favor, especially coming after the wind of what happened in Malacca and Johor. And they have this perception that they can bring the economy back. They think that, you know, this idea this that they can, that, you know, that this is with them back in government, that money is going to pour in and everything else. And I think that there, you know, it's a different environment than it was. And I think that and the fact that they have had a pattern of, you know, promoting instability since 2018, I think will not necessarily serve them in the kind of stability narrative that they're trying to articulate now. And I think that the party is convinced, you know, that once they're back in power, everything is going to be hunky-dory. They have this kind of, you know, desperation to get back to a nostalgic time of being in the dominant position.
That's it. We have seen UMNO faring well in recent by-elections. Might we see a similar outcome in the GE?
I think, you know, general elections are different than state elections, where you can galvanize resources into a smaller area, even as large an area that was in Johor. Both Malacca and Johor were traditionally UMNO strongholds, so I don't think that they necessarily reflected the entire country. But I think we did see some really important trajectories from those elections that I think are important to kind of pull out. First of all, you know, three-corner contests really were very different in 2021 and 22 than they were previously, a.k.a. in GE14, they benefited largely Pakatan Harapan, not exclusively, but largely Pakatan Harapan. Now, three-corner fights really work against Pakatan Harapan because we have a more diverse place, and it's taking away some of the supporters that might come to them. Part of that is also because they haven't necessarily reached out and lost those supporters on their own. But it is a situation that is a dynamic that is different. The second thing is that we do see tremendous fluidity. I've run a series of simulations of what could happen in the next election, you know, based on different projections of voting behavior on the current electoral roll. And, you know, it doesn't take much to switch things. Even as a 5% shift in support can move in a very different direction, because one third of the seats are highly competitive. So all things being equal, UMNO still goes into this election in the strongest position, but it is very different now. Number one, It is clear that they will not be a dominant party in the same way, I think, that they think they can be coming out of Malacca and Johor. There will be a need for coalitions to rule. Well, it's not impossible for them to win two-thirds because of the fluidity that I spoke to you about in terms of the shifts of moving. I think that what you have is because they've gone into an Undi Banjir, they've given the opposition a kind of what I call a saving buoy, a flood election that really sort of helps them to galvanize support their base. And so it's likely that they're going to be weaker in terms of being able to galvanize some of their base than they thought they were. And they're going to need the cooperation from Borneo and other parties. The second factor is that we're in a different type of political situation. And we've been in this way from a long period of time, from 2009 onwards, 2008 in some ways. And that is we have now the dominance of post-election coalitions. So we have what's interesting also is that this is also about pre-election alliances, right? But so these two different sides of things, you know, and AMNO continues to believe it still operates in the politics of the past. It wants to go back to that. And as we look to the polls now, obviously, it's not just about turnout numbers, which unfortunately Undi Banjir reduce, but it's about turning out your supporters. And AMNO has been better at doing that than Pakatan Harapan and even PN, because except for PAS, which does a reasonably good job of that. And then the second thing is that which creates a lot of uncertainty, is the one-third of the new electorate, particularly young people, but, you know, not just Undi 18. A lot of these people are in their 20s. And if they come out and they invest in their future and their political future, and none of the parties have yet given them a reason to do so. And I think this is going to be the burden on the campaign and for the political parties to deliver something concrete to them.
Let's talk about Dato' Sri Ismail Sabri Yaakob, right? Because he's had a brief but relatively stable stint as Prime Minister. Has he demonstrated enough leadership and capability in his tenure to lead AMNO in the coming election?
The short answer to that is no. But the longer answer is more, I think, more important. I think, first of all, his stability came from an MOU with the opposition. And it was something that was given to him, all right, as opposed to something that he earned, including his prime ministership. And in fact, you know, his ending was very much defining him. It defined him not as a fighter against the party, but not as a fighter for the people in terms of people's interests in that context. So this is why Muhyiddin Yassin remains more popular than Ismail Sabri, because there was the perception that he put the priorities of the rocket first, although whether or not that's a reality is another question, but in terms of the public perceptions. I think overall, Ismail Sabri's leadership was quite lackluster. There are no major sort of accomplishments that can be tied to him. You know, the idea of Keluarga Malaysia was that you had a fighting family, not a family that was working well together. And it was a family that favored maybe only a few of the fathers and not the mothers. And that we saw, you know, a situation where the legacies of government, which there were many legacies of his government, good ones, they come from particular ministers that were not him, such as Khairi in the health ministry or Wan Janadi in the law ministry. I don't say that Ismail Sabri is finished politically, because in Malaysia, you know, everyone seems to come back, you know, no matter what happens. But I think that he's not as strong as if he would have stayed on. And right now, I think that his future is going to depend on the dynamic within the party itself. And by choosing to allow these elections to move forward, he's basically given way to other interests in the party. And the question will become what happens with an AMNO, whether or not AMNO, you know, and this has been a perennial question, whether AMNO will actually allow its more capable leaders to rise, and there are capable leaders within that party, or will it be beholden to those that are tainted and that don't have the same level of competence? And we've seen, unfortunately, the latter, not necessarily the former, in the recent past.
So, according to AMNO sources, they're still clashing with PAS over seat negotiations, and PAS hasn't committed to the conditions outlined by Zahid to sever ties with PN and Bersatu. Can AMNO afford to go into GE15 without support from PAS?
Well, UMNO thinks it can afford to do anything because they're concerned about themselves. But I want to first point out that in Malay politics, but particularly in UMNO politics, that what you see on the surface is not necessarily what may be happening behind the surface. Right? And so the more that they say that there are problems is the more that us as political analysts recognize that there may not be problems in this context. Now, let's look at the particulars, right? Their vested interests in 29 seats to deal with this issue of three-corner fights, seats like Kuantan, Uslango, or Timolo, Rao, we all know what the lists are if we look carefully. And what we see, you know, there is a lot of pressure on the ground to form a working relationship, particularly in states like Pahang, Selangor, and in parts of Perak, for example. But the challenge is that we still have this idea of dominance, right, that I was talking about earlier. UMNO thinks that they can do everything alone, huh? You know, that we're in charge, everyone else must follow. We're the chosen ones, everyone else gets, we choose them if we choose in that context. And we can see this arrogance in the way that he's speaking to PAS. And PAS is a much stronger party than I think most people give it credit for. So my sense is that, there are problems, but I think that there are also vested interests pushing to address those. And the question will become whether or not there is some sort of accommodation, at least quietly or more covertly.
So if we look to Bersatu, back in September, Bersatu President Tan Sri Muhyiddin Yassin said that BN was Perikatan's main enemy in GE15. Do you think that the PN pact is dead, or might there be a need for them to reassess their position on this?
Look, you know, we were just talking about this idea that we need to have that Malaysia is a post-coalition system, right? So, you know, UMNO could end up working with PAS even if it's not in the before the elections, but later, right? In the context of the PAS-Bersatu relationship, when we look at what are the factors that are sort of deciding, you know, how they're working and how they're working with Bersatu, I think that what we see is that, you know, Bersatu provides resources for them. They provide a kind of outreach into non-Malays, although not so electorally. For the other side of the coin, in terms of Bersatu, right? You know, Bersatu is perhaps, I would argue, one of the most vulnerable political parties besides the smaller parties. I mean, almost all of their seats are under high risk of being lost. I think that, Bersatu, we can see from their public statements. I was watching one recently where one of its leaders was talking about how we all work together. Well, you know, it's sending clear signals that we're willing to just follow PAS and have a second and third political wife if necessary in certain circumstances. All right. So I think what we see is a situation with Bersatu where it is in a high period of vulnerability. PAS gives them the machinery. It gives them credibility in some of the seats that they're looking at. But at the same time, it won't necessarily secure a win for them completely. And I think that we're going to see more conversations that Bersatu will be making with a whole series of parliament parties in order to be able to try to find a way to politically survive.
Bridget, we have a couple of minutes left on this side of things. Where's Pakatan Harapan in all of this?
Well, I think, you know, Pakatan Harapan has been given, as I mentioned earlier, a kind of lifesaver from a perspective of the way the election moves. But that won't be enough for them. OK, I think that Pakatan Harapan, you know, it's not 2018 where there's a sense of hope and optimism. There's a much more, I think, more critical electorate and electorate critical of them. We can see that I think Pakatan Harapan has come together to try to have strong conversations, reach compromises. My expectation is that we're going to see some announcements about some of those compromises moving forward. There's been, you know, their intensity, like all the political parties, looking at issues of seat negotiations. But I think that the question becomes is how whether or not it moves to a more team leadership, but it has a clear kind of narrative that isn't about giving a laundry list of promises, but actually is about changing governance and helping to rebuild trust. They can't get elected by just being the opposite of the other and just mobilizing anger. They have to give its electorate a bit more credibility and more weight in terms of the things that it will do when it actually goes into government.
We've been speaking with Dr. Bridget Welsh, Honorary Research Associate at the University of Nottingham, Malaysia. There's lots of ground to cover on this, of course. We'll keep doing that after the 6:30 news. In the meantime, do keep sending your thoughts through. How are you feeling about GE15 coming up? What do you make of the timing? You can call 7733 2900, send us a voice note or WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio.
Beyond Frivolous Matters, BFM 89.9.
It's 6:37, just coming up to 6:38. In fact, you're listening to Inside Story with Sharmila and Lynn. And we're looking ahead to GE15, given that Parliament's now been dissolved. And looking at where all the various players are, what we can expect. Do keep your thoughts coming. How are you feeling about GE15 coming up soon? What do you make of the timing? Dr. Bridget Welsh, Honorary Research Associate at the University of Nottingham, Malaysia, has stayed on to continue her conversation with us. So before the break, Bridget, we just about stopped at Pakatan Harapan. So let's pick up there. The election will see Rafizi Ramli returning to the fray. How much will this help to improve this sort of fraught and fractured image that the coalition currently holds?
I would say that, Rafizi Ramli has brought a dynamism back to PKR's campaign, especially in the urban areas. But, you know, one of the challenges that PKR faces is that it is still very much a fragmented party and it still is very personality based. And I think, the question now will be how well Rafizi works with more collaboratively with the other partners. And how the party can move away from its past. You know, it's a party that is deeply traumatized. It sees, is very suspicious of others. It's because of betrayers and others. And I think that type of, unfortunately, that type of discourse only brings a small share of their political supporters back. But it reminds everyone else of the problems of a PKR that were caused in the divisions within the PKR. So it actually doesn't help them politically. So the question now will be how much of this can be looking towards a more future-oriented dynamic. And also, there is also a delicate balance here. Rafizi's presence, has actually helped to sort of focus more energy on younger leaders within the party. But there also becomes a point where he's overshadowing Anwar. And so the question now is becoming whether or not there's a team dynamic that's at play. And also to make sure there is, the suspicions and the divisions within the party don't necessarily hamper PKR's campaign and that of Pakatan Harapan moving forward.
So Harapan are expected to announce who will be part of the coalition. And when we mentioned the word fraught earlier, this itself has been rather fraught. Both Muda and PSM are waiting to see if they're going to be included here. How do you see this playing out?
There are lots of type of political alliances and relationships. And I think, one doesn't have to be fully married to someone and be part of the coalition to still have a working alliance relationship with. I think that, my sense is that it may not be full inclusion from a perspective of forcing them to be a member. And I actually believe that this is not a bad thing because, PSM and Muda have their own comparative strengths and their own identity and appeal. Not everybody has to be the same. Not everybody has to follow exactly the same platform. And this is what coalition politics is all about, that they have that these different components of parties represent different sets of constituencies. My projection is that they will reach some sort of agreement. Of course, the longer it waits, the more it's destructive for everyone. But I think that, I think that there has been considerable dialogue and discussions on these matters. And I think that, it won't be something that is all satisfied. The problem goes back just now, what I mentioned is that there's still a lot of suspicion and anger. And one of the problems that Pakatan Harapan as a coalition and its friends and allies have had to wrestle with is that they tend to see each other as the enemy as opposed to as the political opponent. And the cyber troopers and the energy just goes on, bringing each other down as opposed to those focusing on the components. And this division and infighting is actually really, unfortunately, branded Pakatan Harapan and its allies. So I think the question now is how they come up and how they moving forward.
So overall, do you anticipate any surprise alliances as parties continue their closed-door negotiations?
as I've indicated, alliances can take many forms. You don't have to have a kind of consolidated pact that you've had in before. You can have a working relationship, an alliance for a campaign period, or at least a sense of we're not going to be enemies, even if we're not friends. You know, many people live in neighbor. You have neighbors that you acknowledge and you're polite to, but you don't live in their house and they don't live in yours. And I think that, you know, this goes back to the challenge of trying to create a dynamic for viable post-coalition politics. And also, it also indicates that the priorities of different parties, you know, I think that the infighting within the opposition broadly only strengthens AMNO and BN. There's probably less acknowledgement of that because of the trauma that the parties feel among each other. But I think that this is a fundamental reality, is that they are going into this election in a much weaker position than they were in GE14.
We have a message from Lee Jun, who says, my wish is that KJ will remain as health minister regardless of the outcome. He has done a great job so far. So I wanted to take this opportunity to ask you about Khairi Jamaluddin, who at this moment in time, we're not entirely sure whether he will be defending his seat in Rembau or where it is he might be contesting. He said that it's up to the party to send him where they will.
Well, I think AMNO would be, as a party, would be stupid to remove him from contesting at all. The question is which seat that he will probably get in some form or fashion. You know, I think that Khairi's dynamic within AMNO is a troubled one. Number one, he doesn't have as much grassroots as others. He has a weaker relation. He has a kind of sour relationship with a number of the core leaders, not least of which is Zahid Hamidi, which he challenged for the presidency for. You know, I think that it's going to take time for him to rebuild in the dynamic. And I think that one of the bigger, broader issues that go well beyond Khairi Jamaluddin is that, you know, the divisions in AMNO are far from over. And I mean that, you know, if everyone is focusing on the election and they put on a united front for, or at least a kind of look like united front for the election, those divisions are going to have to play out 6 months later in a party election that will have considerable fraught elements in terms of the different factions. Khairi is a player in that. And I think one of the reasons why he's been such pushed to the side is because he is actually so powerful from the perspective of public persona, is this message of this from this young person has indicated. And I think that people are, there's a lot of jealousy from him, of his performance, his solid performance as health minister. But I think, you know, Khairi has proven that he can manage a number of portfolios. And I think that it, and he's clearly going to be a political player moving forward.
So despite all these coalitions potentially holding what might be razor-thin majorities, do you think that G15 and the anti-hopping laws, which were recently passed, can ultimately bring some form of political stability?
You know, the anti-hopping law depends heavily on implementation and whether or not it's accepted in certain states. And I expect there may be legal challenges. You know, just look at Sabah. Sabah has a very different type of politics of changing of coalitions. And I think this is just one example of these areas, right? I've all along argued the anti-hopping law is just one part of the elephant. There are many other parts that have to be dealt with to deal with and strengthening institutions to create stability. But ultimately, the question becomes one about political will, about leaders wanting to work together and to compromise and to focus on questions of governance. And unfortunately, what we found with this Undi Banjir is that we see leaders putting their personal interest over that of the needs of the nation, stability being part of that. I think we've seen moments in the last 4 years where people have focused heavily on stability in the period of crisis. And Malaysia performed reasonably well during the COVID period of time, comparatively internationally. And so I think there is the capacity to try to find solutions. And I think that it's now really about the electorate making their choices to put pressure on that and to try to kind of push the politics in a different direction that is more constructive.
Bridget, in closing, is there a final thought or message you want to leave us with?
The campaign hasn't started. There's a lot more to do.
Bridget, thanks for speaking with us today.
Have a good evening, everyone.
You too. That was Dr. Bridget Welsh, Honorary Research Associate at the University of Nottingham, Malaysia. helping us in many ways unpack where everything is at the moment, but also what to look forward to in some regard. Let us know, how are you feeling about GE15 coming up soon? What do you make of the timing? You can call 7733 2900, WhatsApp, or send us a voice note, 018-789-8899. Tweet us at BFM Radio.
We're also, by the way, preparing our election programming, focusing on the battle for Malaysia. So if you want to be a part of that, send us a voice note, about 20 seconds long, answering what do you want from the government. Again, about 20 seconds tops. The question is, what do you want from the government? Send that voice note to 018-789-8899.
Because freedom matters. BFM 89.9.
It's 6:49. You're listening to Inside Story with Sharmila and Lynn. And pretty much most of the show today has been dedicated to discussing the upcoming GE15. Send your thoughts through. How are you feeling about elections coming up soon? And what do you make of the timing? You can call 7733 2900, send us a voice note, or WhatsApp 018-789-8899. Tweet us at BFM Radio. We have so many thoughts already. Let's start with this voice note from Aizat.
I believe the recent announcement to dissolve the parliament can never have come at a bad timing due to the monsoon season. We have been experiencing increasingly bad floods in the recent years that have affects the livelihood of the people. We can see last year the worst has happened for the first time in many years, especially in Selangor and Klang area. Not to mention the areas that are prone to floods in the east coast and the southern part of the peninsula. The government should focus on preparing for the flood in terms of planning for the budget, resources, rescue teams and joint team relief efforts to avoid the worst case scenario instead of having to plan for an election. Also, another question to ask is, what does it mean on the national budget table in the parliament recently? Surely a new budget will need to be tabled once again with a new government post GE15, and the process will need to be restarted all over again. It is indeed a waste of time and resources that surely could have been avoided if the planning had been done properly.
Thank you for that, Aizat. That point about the floods is something that's coming through loud and clear with a lot of the messages. And I think it's such a valid concern because, firstly, it's not something you can plan for. And as someone else earlier brought up as well, the use of resources that now will need to be divided between the elections and flood relief is no small thing.
I mean, on a very basic level, right, schools.
Yeah.
How are schools going to be used? Traditionally, they offer shelter for people who are experiencing floods. They are also, of course, where it is that elections, that votes are cast. There's also that question, if there are floods, the ensuring that votes get to vote counting centres in a timely fashion, without interference. You know, there are all these questions that come up, and the logistics become, I was going to say doubly hard, but I'm not even sure it's double. I think that there's, you know, just such a compounding effect on how difficult things have become. So we have some suggestions in relation to that, right? Cheryl, for instance, says, by not having a fixed date for GE, it will already inflate the cost of having GE. Having a separate election for federal and state will not much reduce the cost. Ame does say, though, the state duns should be dissolved. Think about the cost. Be gentlemen. Amir adds, we need to cast our vote ASAP. Future government will potentially be more challenging. The worst is yet to come. But the main thing I wanted to tie together was Cheryl saying not having a fixed date for GE, and we saying moving forward, election dates must be fixed at regular intervals. Unfortunately, calling the date in Malaysia has been a political game by politicians. Fixed election dates have the advantage of fairness and predictability.
And also addresses the other topic that we've been discussing today, right? This notion of, well, why is it that we can have a situation where the budget can be tabled one day and then 2 days later, Parliament dissolved?
Also, state and federal going together.
Yes.
Because if you have it on a regular day, then, barring by-elections for unforeseen reasons or defections or whatever it may be, you should, in theory, have things running like clockwork, right? And coinciding. I think this question of not just cost, but also resources is important, because if you have them at a fixed regular date, then everybody can prepare ahead of time and everybody can kind of reserve allocations and start strategizing with the same amount of information.
We have another voice note. This one is from Najman.
So yeah, I'm feeling rather anxious about this upcoming GE15, especially because of the safety reasons for my friends and family. I do have quite a few friends or family staying in, or rather voting in Kelantan, in Pahang, and some of them are in East Malaysia as well. And as we all know that this is the rainy season, and flooding is not an uncommon thing, and they're all expecting floods to happen in Kelantan and in some parts of East Coast Malaysia and East Malaysia as well. My friends and family, some of them don't even go back for Raya during these times. This is something that they have to do, which is going back to vote. I'm quite anxious about it. I'm really praying for everyone's safety, not just my friends and family, but yeah, everyone who's going back to vote.
Najman, thank you for that. And, you know, I hear you. I think if you either have family or even yourself live in places that are flood prone, yeah, this is a very anxiety-inducing time.
So I was thinking about this earlier, about the belief that we need to have a general election. The argument that we need to have a general election in order to do away with uncertainty and politicking and, you know, returning a strong mandate to a strong government and so on and so forth. But so far, at least, in the short term, all that has happened has been the creation of a fair amount of uncertainty and anxiety, because is the budget going to be tabled? Yes, no. Okay, it was, but now it doesn't matter. So is general election going to be close to monsoon? And what does that mean? We still don't know. What kind of preparations are there going to be? We don't know. And so, Najman, I totally get you on this issue of anxiety. And I think this not knowing, particularly when you are facing something as capricious as the weather, is very difficult to contend with.
So moving away for a bit from the question of floods and perhaps into the what do we want from our candidates territory, we have an anonymous listener who says, I want true policymakers who believe in systems and implementations. There's a lack of interest in policymaking among our politicians. It probably is a time for the rakyat to vote for the quality of the candidate, regardless of the political party.
NN echoes that, saying, I just heard your interview with Bridget. I think the focus should be on the key issues confronting this country, especially corruption within UMNO. What we should do is reject such leaders and elect the right ones. There are many other issues facing us, such as for our constitution to remain vibrant, building unity and coexisting as one.
I mean, no disagreements there. I think that those are really the ideals when we talk about candidates and politicians we want to see. Khalil says, personally, I'm still looking for a truly neutral party as opposed to race-based or claiming to be race-based, with the principle of people first, not business first. People first mindset, PFM.
Followed by helpfully not PFM.
I just didn't want to read that because it sounded like he was voting against us, which I would like to think is not the case.
By the way, while we're talking about what people want, Shara says, the first thing that comes to my mind, I would like to see more concrete efforts in curbing corruption at all levels, more transparent systems, open tender for projects, external auditing processes. Show us and prove to us what bursae means.
Yeah, I mean, I think that actually is... That's really the thing, right? In all of this conversation about, is this the right time? What do we want to see? In the end, I think people want a clear direction and clear directives, not just from the ruling government, but from the opposition in terms of what are they actually going to stand for?
So I think part of what contributes to the fatigue is when you look around and you don't see either... And you don't see somebody who represents you or who you feel you would want to represent you. And when you look at the alternative, right, rather than proposing a hope, it's instead, I wouldn't be that way. I wouldn't do that. And this is something that, again, our guest, Dr. Bridget Welsh, referenced earlier, that there needs to be a putting forward of plans, of principle, you know, and not so much just reactions and opposition.
We have a few seconds left. So Azlan, with a very Malaysian message, saying we need certainty from the new government. We need to know if there will be public holidays after they've won the election.
Azlan,
I gotta say, Azlan.
Azlan, with respect, with respect, if somebody comes in to a charama and I hear this, I don't know how I would feel. I don't know if I'm voting for them.
I don't know if that's quite the color that I enjoy. But keep those thoughts coming. We are talking about GE15. Let us know how you feeling about elections coming up soon. What do you make of the timing? You can call 777-332-900, send us a voice note or WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. After the break, we will be looking at more of your messages and also talking about the disconnect between when federal and state elections might be held. So keep it here on Inside Story, BFM 89.9.
Bring forth Moolah, BFM 89.9.
It's 7:08. You're listening to Inside Story with Sharmila and Lynn, and we're continuing our discussion on GE15. Send your thoughts through. How are you feeling about elections coming soon? And what do you make of the timing of it all? You can call 777-332-900, WhatsApp, or send us a voice note 018-789-8899. Tweet us at BFM Radio. Let's start with a voice note from Baharia.
The dissolution of the parliament at this point of time means the caretaker government needs to be more responsible in coming up with a plan, especially as we know we are facing a monsoon season where the well-being and the welfare of our people through this tough time need to be taken care of. The question is, how do they balance that with the election work? Something, a question that a government need to answer and be prepared well.
Thank you for that, Baharia. As I said, lots of opinions about the flood. None of them really are thinking this is the best idea.
I have an issue here, and that is simply put that I wish that the floods didn't then become part and parcel of a GE ballot, or part and parcel of something that you can stand on and say, see, I promise you that I will handle the floods in XYZ manner, or if you vote for us, that the floods will whatever, whatever. Like, I think that having people in positions of power managing and planning for floods and flood mitigation as well as flood aid, that is just what their job is. It shouldn't be something that, if done well, turns into a talking point. And I think that we are now at a point where that is somewhat unavoidable, because everything is going to become an election talking point. And there is something kind of cheapening about the floods, unfortunately, becoming part of that conversation.
Yeah, no, I know. Thank you for actually crystallizing why this, to me, has felt both ill-timed, but also in that regard, a sort of just something that I anticipate will become a cheap way of gaining support. Someone else texted in earlier about how, oh, now candidates can say they are going to go out and help. And that's exactly it. And that's kind of not what I want to see. I want to see actual help. I don't want the help to then be capitalized on for political points. We have Munif saying, not only do I live in flood central, that is Shah Alam, my wedding is at the end of the year as well. It shows how much the government cares for the people indeed. An inmate is licking his lips at the prospect of escape. Consequences to the people be damned. For the good of everything that is beautiful in this world, I just hope our opposition bucks up, stops being power hungry and imploding with infighting yet again. Give the people the alternative we crave. Put on a united front, even if it is indeed just a front for now.
So on that note about the opposition, we also have this from Maximus, who says, I don't agree with Bridget that Pakatan Harapan is fragmented. If there is one coalition which is strong, it's them. PKR, DAP and Amana have stuck together through thick and thin. The traitors have left. Let's hope there are no more Trojan horses in the coalition. On the other hand, it is BN, Bersatu and PAS who are dilly-dallying with each other. I love the, thank you for bringing dilly-dallying back into my vocabulary. But also, I think that there's pretty clear evidence on both sides of this argument, I think. I will say that I don't think necessarily that anybody is providing the most united front.
Yes, that's true. And no one's making no one's actually making much bones about the fact that a lot of this has to do with just the right kind of coalition that suits this purpose. We have NN saying, we need a clean government and to eliminate shoddy performances by most ministers and civil servants in the country. In Malay, the appropriate word is tenat, and that's what's happening to this country. We cannot continue this way. This election should pave the way towards a more responsible and accountable government that's capable of delivering at a world-class level. We have quite a long way to go.
And you know what I really love about your message is this election should pave the way towards, because that acknowledges that you're not necessarily voting for immediate change, and that maybe thinking that way is comforting in the short term but disappointing in the long, and that recognizing that, you know, the road towards having a more responsible, accountable government capable of delivering at a world-class level is potentially a long one, but that is the ultimate aim.
Well, we have Anderson saying, listening to all these comments, it clearly shows that UMNO and BN politicians don't care as long as they go to the polls, all because their leaders face court decisions in the coming months. No regards or respect for anyone and seeking absolute power, no matter what or how they achieve it.
A sentiment that we've been hearing a lot, unfortunately. We also have, let's see. All right, we've got this from Ro, who says, is the reason why elections are being called during the monsoon season because the government believes that's the way you secure a landslide victory?
Okay.
Sharmila didn't like herself for laughing.
I laughed because I always appreciate good wordplay, but I also kind of judged myself and you a little bit, Ro. We have, I think, let's see, we have an anonymous listener saying, GE15, I still don't have a candidate or a political party that I want to vote for. At least I think the person or party I may want may not figure at all in the area I'm in. Interesting, because at the moment, we still don't know, right? We don't know who's going to run and what the coalition lines are going to look like.
Yeah, I'm also, perhaps because we haven't been at this point yet, we don't exactly know, or the candidates haven't truly begun their run at explaining what it is that they're going to stand for, or what it is that they plan to represent the constituency with. So, you know, maybe once the seats are out, having a look at who's representing you, checking out their social media and what it is that they say that they're going to stand for might be a good start to getting you, you know, feeling a bit more confident about the people who might represent you in the future.
Just very quickly, before we move on to our next guest, you know, lots of conversations about floods have been coming through. And on that vein, we have this from Nadia.
I think the dissolution could be scheduled at a better time, considering the potential flood risk in the next few months.
Thank you for that, Nadia. Briefly put, but well put. And that's actually part of what we're going to be talking about after this. Our guest very shortly will be Dr. Johan Saravanamuthu, who is Emeritus Professor at University Science Malaysia and an Adjunct Senior Fellow at S. Rajaratnam School of International Studies. And we'll be talking about both the floods, as well as the fact that it looks like federal and state elections may not happen concurrently. So keep those thoughts coming. How are you feeling about GE15? What do you make of the timing? You can call us, WhatsApp us, send us a voice note, and tweet us, and keep it here on Inside Story, BFM 89.9.
Brainy, fancy material. BFM 89.9.
It's 7:17. You're listening to Inside Story with Sharmila and Lynn. And we're continuing our conversation around GE15 by looking at the, as of now, many states will not be having state elections at the same time as the federal elections. So we're going to discuss what that means and in a larger sense, what that means within the context of the monsoon season and flooding. Keep those thoughts coming. How are you feeling about GE15 coming up soon? What do you make of the timing? You can call us. You can WhatsApp us, you can send us a voice note or tweet us. Joining us now is Dr. Johan Saravanamuthu, Emeritus Professor of Political Science at the School of Social Sciences at USM, as well as Adjunct Senior Fellow at S. Rajaratnam School of International Studies. Dr. Johan, good to have you with us.
Yeah, good evening.
So to start us off, what was your reaction to the dissolution of Parliament? What did you make of the timing of it all?
Well, I guess the timing was obvious. It was going on for a while. When it was obviously the Prime Minister was under a lot of pressure from his party to have that election. And the president of UMNO, Mr. Zahid Hamidi, obviously wanted to have the elections early for a good number of reasons, right? You know, including his own problem of the trial that he faces. He's got over one. He's got another trial. I suppose he wanted it to be held before the trial would, you know, the second trial would continue. And so UMNO wanted very much to have this election. I suppose they persuaded their partners within the Barisan Nasional to also accept the idea of the early election, in spite of all the objections from all and sundry, particularly the opposition parties, that it won't be good to have elections during this time because of monsoons, the northeast monsoon.
So,
Go ahead.
No, because a big part of this conversation really has been that the states under Pakatan Harapan, other states as well that have recently held state elections, aren't going to dissolve state assemblies, which means, of course, that we're going to have elections that are now somewhat out of sync. How will this impact the general elections in terms of cost and voter turnout?
Okay, so this is rather unprecedented. I mean, we've had a couple of states, usually Sarawak, out of sync with the general election. And we do call it a general election, which means all, you know, we are a federal system, which means the federal government as well as the state governments would have elections in you know, simultaneously or concurrently. So this time around, we have possibly only a minority of states which will be holding their state or dissolving their state legislatures for elections. So this is unprecedented. I don't think it's ever happened in Malaysia before. When you had this number of states, they are likely to be not dissolved and will sort of carry on for their full term. So this is interesting. The impact on this would be, I think, one of the major impacts on it will be the low turnout. This for sure, because you know, people go to vote in an election for both the state, for their state representatives and their federal representatives. Maybe they don't have the appetite to vote, to go out and vote this time for that reason, because this is not an election that will, you know, will mean that they have the choice of choosing both the federal as well as the state representatives. So that's one. You had another question, I think, about this.
Well, the other question was about cost.
Ah, yes. So, of course, there's been a lot of complaints on the opposition side, and I think civil society as well. This will mean having to hold elections again for those states which have not held elections. And if they were to meet do their full term, I don't think it will be within the period of a year or so. And this will mean that the election commission has to be called in again. And all the other machinery that's necessary for elections will definitely involve a lot of costs. Personnel will be needed to man the polling stations, etc., etc. It will be a nuisance for most people to have another election so soon after we've had a general election, a federal one. Yeah.
So if we look at yesterday's announcement, the PM advised the state governments to seek the consent of their rulers and governors and to dissolve their respective state assemblies, with the exception of Malacca, Johor, Sabah and Sarawak. What authority does the PM have to compel state governments to hold elections?
The PM doesn't have an authority over the states that his party doesn't control. So, as you know, there's now a lot of discussion going on within the PH party's states. So the PH parties, So Penang, for example, is going into a powwow. Originally, they had said that they will not hold their state elections concurrently with the federal election, if it's called early. They want to go full term. The CM of Penang, Mr. Chow, said that. However, as you know, the latest news is that they are going to ask the DAP brass, top brass, at the national level, whether this is a good thing or not. There are a few reasons why they're thinking that way. Exactly your point about costs. Will people be angry that the state government doesn't have elections at the same time? And it will mean a lot of cost to the rakyat. It'll be a nuisance to the rakyat. What are the possible, negative impacts on the state government? Then you have the past states. Those are the states that will be hit by the floods. You have Terengganu, Kelantan, and Kedah, who are very flood prone. I'm not sure if there are floods already happening now. So they definitely, I think, will not be calling the elections, and they have the right to do so. And the PM has no authority over those states. Now, there are two BN states that have had elections recently in 2022. That's Johor. And in 2021, that's Melaka. So it makes a sense for them, having just got their new legislatures, not to hold elections concurrently. So I think that's the reason why the PM mentioned that here, you know, only those states that you had mentioned will be holding their elections.
Another major factor is the floods. Can you talk to us about how they enter the picture here, especially in terms of voter sentiment and how that might play for the ruling coalition?
For the vote, I think for voter sentiment, I think it's already clear. A lot of people have expressed, I mean, you have all these memes. There is a hashtag that goes by Undi Banje. And all kinds of memes. People are angry. There's a lot of civil groups out there who have called, and of course the opposition political parties have called for elections not to be held at this time because it is a burden to ordinary people. You know, some of them may not make it there. In fact, Anwar Ibrahim has called this voter suppression. You're actually preventing people from actually being able to vote because of the flood situation. Mind you, Malaysia has had elections during monsoons before, right? They've had the Sarawak election, was it last year? In December, 18th of December, if I'm not mistaken. And they had to evacuate a whole bunch of people, right? I think I read in the internet that something like 20,000 people had to be evacuated. And obviously, if you're evacuated from your polling area, you won't be allowed to vote. So there are all of these implications, which are clearly not good in terms of the idea that, you know, one man, one vote, one person, one vote. We have to have, you know, people have to be given the democratic rights. So that's the kind of implication. And of course, the suffering that people will have to go through, should you want to vote, do you travel to vote in a boat? You know, you have all those kinds of implications when you have voting at this time of the year. Yeah.
Dr. Johan, what kind of developments are you anticipating in the coming weeks?
There will be a lot of development. You know, Malaysia is in a period of very, very fluid politics. I think all of us know, right? I mean, coalitions have come and gone. Parties have come and gone. You have new parties. You have new people switching parties. And we've had an anti-hopping law introduced. Well, hopefully that will hold for a while. Clearly, the main thing that will happen will be the three major, the big three, let's call them, coalitions, right? You have the N, you have PH, and you also have the PN, right? You know, they apparently don't like each other very much. So they will be jockeying positions first to select candidates, and they're in the case of the PH, a couple of parties do actually want to join the PH, and they're under negotiations now. So these negotiations will go on. Muda desperately wants to join the PH, and the PH seems to be demurring at the moment. But Anwar Ibrahim has recently said that he's still open to the idea. So we have those kinds of things going on. Who is going to stand where? I just read today that Selangor is not dissolving. You know, this Selangor state election, the Sultan has, in his wisdom, said we will not dissolve. I agree with the state government to not dissolve the legislature. And I believe they've said that most of the candidates, this is PKR, which is the governing coalition, or PH, the governing coalition, said most of the candidates who are already in the current position at the parliamentary level will stay there, except for Gombak and Ampang, because Ampang is the seat that's held by Zuraida Kamarudin, who has switched parties, right? She's joined Bersatu, and Gombak is held by Azmin Ali, who has also switched to Bersatu. So you have that kind of situation. I think all these kinds of developments will be taking place. Who is going to stand where? And another interesting development is you have independent candidates. There's a group called Gerak Independent. You may have heard, you may know, right? Mm. They have 6 or 7 candidates. Among them is Taufik Ismail, the son of Tun Dr. Ismail. I think he intends to stand for elections. Another very interesting and prominent personality is Siti Kasim. Are they going to be standing for elections as well? So they'll be choosing their particular seats. I think Siti Kasim wants to stand in Batum. So there are all these interesting developments going on. And I think we'll be looking at a very, very, an election where you see multi-corner fights. You're not going to have one satu lawan satu, right? You're going to have a lot of candidates vying for seats in these parliamentary constituencies.
Dr. Johan, thanks for speaking with us. That was Dr. Johan Saravanamuthu, Emeritus Professor of Political Science at the School of Social Sciences at USM, Adjunct Senior Fellow at S. Rajaratnam School of International Studies. And keep those thoughts coming. How are you feeling about GE15? What do you make of the timing? You can call us, WhatsApp us, send us a voice note, or tweet us. After this on Popcorn Culture, we'll be reviewing Athena. So keep it here, BFM 89.9.
You have been listening to a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station. For more stories of the same kind, download the BFM app.